Hello everyone and welcome to Gutsy Living. I'm Sonia Marsh, the author of the blog Gutsy Living, Life is Too Short to Play It Safe, and the author of my forthcoming travel memoir, which is Free Ways to Flip Flops, Our Year of Living Like the Swiss Family Robinson. This book is about how our family made a gutsy move from California to Belize to change our life. And I'm very happy today to have a wonderful guest, Robert McPhee. And before I introduce him, let me just tell you that our theme is going to be how to get out of your comfort zone. So, Robert, are you there?
I am here. I'm excited to be here.
Good. Well, let me give a little bit of background about you, and then we can start with some questions from my audience. So, Robert is the founder and president of Heartset, Inc., which is a company dedicated to helping people lead more satisfying and productive lives. He's also the creator of the Heartset on Fitness multimedia program, which is designed to help people develop a mental approach to health and fitness that will complement their exercise and nutrition plan. So if any of you are into exercising and nutrition, I hope you call in. We also want to mention that Robert McPhee is the author of Manifesting for Non-Gurus, which is a book and it has a companion journal, and it's how to quickly and easily attract lasting results. Finally, Robert is also the director of training for Canfield Training Group between the 2007 and 2010. He worked closely with Jack Canfield, who is the co-creator of the Chicken Soup for the Soul book series. Now, as far as his personal life, he's a marathon runner, a basketball player, and lives in San Diego, California with his wife and three children. So I'm very happy that I had the pleasure of meeting Robert at the Inside Edge in Irvine, California about a month ago, where you made a speech, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And I thought he would be a wonderful person to interview regarding how to get out of your comfort zone, since that is kind of what my blog is all about. So I have about 8 questions that people have sent in to me, and I would like to ask you, Robert, would you like to go straight into the questions, or do you prefer to tell us a little bit about the 5 steps approach of manifesting for non-gurus? I'll leave it up to you.
Well, I suspect that will kind of emerge out of the questions, and rather than, you know, I'll probably launch into a tirade and not stop as once I get started on those 5 steps and the core of our work and everything. But I would just say to start off with that, you know, as I kind of met you at the Inside Edge and took a look at the work that you're doing, and even as I listened to you introducing me today, it's just really clear to me that my work and your experience of getting out of your own comfort zone and the story that's in your book about your family and making the decision to live a different lifestyle, despite the fact that I'm sure it was way outside of the comfort zone in many ways, makes me really happy to be in this conversation with you, and I'm looking forward to how we can continue to support each other. So let's just launch right into the questions.
Okay, that's a good idea. The first question that I got was, let me read it to you. It's, over the years, I have been told that to manifest something, one has to be pure of heart as well as intentioned. However, I have noticed that I've had clear intentions which have manifested nothing or not what I desired, and other times with unclear intentions manifest things better than expected. What is going on there?
See, I knew these questions would get us right into the 5 steps of the approach, because, right here, the question really touches directly on at least 3, right up the top of my head, of the different steps of the approach that I teach to manifesting. And, the person who's asking the question is looking at this idea of being what she calls pure of heart. And in the vernacular that we teach, that we use in terms of teaching our approach to manifesting and it's what's in the book and what we encourage people to implement with the Partner Journal, is a question called, who am I? And I think what she is calling pure of heart would be what I would call pursuing intentions that are really in alignment with who we really are, in alignment with our values, in alignment with what's most important to us. And we do see that people will be able to manifest more quickly and certainly have more of the experience that they really want when they make sure that the intentions that they're setting, the goals that they're pursuing, really are in alignment with who they are. The other issue that she's talking about here is the issue of intentions, and that sometimes we're very clear about exactly what we want, and other times we can be less clear, and the results that we want can sometimes show up even better than we had imagined. And in my experience, that has everything to do with staying really closely connected to the feelings and emotions that are associated with the results that we're intending to attract. So we teach people to set those intentions, make sure they are in alignment with who you really are, and then to pause and take the time to connect to the feelings and emotions that you really expect to be experiencing when you achieve that intention. So even if you're not that like crystal clear, laser focused, all the specifics are in order about your intention, if you are clear that it's going to create the kind of feeling and emotional experience that you really want, then to me that's even more important than the specifics of the intention. And we see people over and over again that attract a different result than they intended, but if they end up feeling better about it, we don't hear anybody complaining.
Right,
so
there's a few
of the different ways of looking at that question.
And I was just curious, do you find that a lot of people have problems defining who they are? I mean, is that something that comes up a lot?
It's a big question. It really is. And actually, when I first started teaching this work, I was teaching a four-step approach, which started with intentions and then moved into the feeling and emotion idea that we were just talking about, then went to letting go of attachments, letting go of the way that we so often get in our own way, and then taking clear and specific actions. And this concept of who am I emerged very quickly as a missing piece and really becomes question number one in the journaling approach we teach, because it's like Stephen Covey said, you know, you don't want to be climbing the ladder of success and then finding that it's leaning against the wrong wall. It is so important to have clarity about who we really are. And you bring up a good point that it's a really big question. It's a slippery question. It's in some ways an unanswerable question. But we look at it from four different angles to help people to clarify how to approach it. The first two are pretty typical and pretty easy for people. It's looking at the roles that we play and looking at our skills and talents, what we're really good at and what we love to do. And for most people, those are pretty simple questions. We can look at the roles we play in our life, and if we ask people that question, who am I, that's usually the kind of answers we get, is the roles people play and their skills and talents, what they spend their time doing and what they really love to do and they're really good at. But the two other pieces that we teach that I think are really far more impactful are to look at the contribution that we're here to make.
Uh-huh.
And in my experience, that's a huge piece of who we really are. When we're really leading a fulfilling life, when we really feel like we're on purpose, and showing up fully as who we are, there's almost always an element of really feeling like we're making a contribution. So helping people identify the contribution that they're here to make is a huge piece of that.
I can just say that from, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say that point that you just made, it seems to me, as taking my own person as an example, that this is something that comes with maturity and age, you know? So, it's an interesting point.
I think it is, and at the same time, I would say from working with young people, which, you know, when you introduced me, I hope it was clear that, you know, that as a parent, you know, it's probably the most important role that I play in my life, and I have had the opportunity to work with young people quite a bit, and one of the reasons why this sense of contribution and purpose doesn't show up until we're a little bit further along in years, until we have a little more maturity, is sometimes as simple as the fact that no one's ever really asked. And it is quite profound to work with young people and ask them this question and allow them to have the opportunity at an earlier age to give some thought and make some decisions about what kind of contribution they really do want to make and what really gives them a sense of purpose. And it's really quite remarkable when young people really get tapped into that sense of who they really are and why they're here. Like anything else with young people, yeah, they can really catch fire. And sometimes kids that are really troubled and not sure what to do, when we talk to them from that point of view, it can put them on a completely different track in a very good way. So
that's an excellent point. I have three kids too, and I've never really asked my kids that question. That's excellent. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's different. I mean, if you have three kids, as I do, you know, we bring them up in the same household. We think we treat them all the same, and yet there's something really unique and special and different about each one of them. And this area of what contribution they want to make, I think maybe what's your major is one of the first times they hear a question like that, and that's a very different kind of question. Mostly it's about, you know, how are you going to make a living rather than what contribution are you really going to make. So, we should do a follow-up. You can have this discussion with your kids and see how it shows up and how they respond, and we'll do a follow-up conversation.
That's a good idea. Yeah. Good idea. I'd like to move on to a question that I think will interest a lot of people, since many of the those who read my blog are writers themselves, and it's related to writing. So
can I pause you for just a second, though, first?
Oh, sure.
What I had said was that there are four different ways. I don't want to leave anyone hanging. There were four different ways that we looked at that question, who am I? And I think we covered three of them. And I would just say that the final area that we look at is who we are at our core, what we call our core self. And this could be, again, this could be a call in and of itself. But when people get a sense of who they really are beyond the roles we play and the body that we hang out in and the accomplishments that we have in life, it's another really powerful way for people to feel that sense of purpose and meaning in their life. So, again, that's something we should, for now, just skim over. But I did want to fill in the blank next to number four for people who are taking notes as we go along.
Wonderful. Good, good. Well, thank you. I'm sorry I interrupted. I have another question here, as I said, for writers, which is, my comfort zone is impeding me from going ahead with a lot of seemingly easy things that would not stop someone like you. By now, after 18 years and 4 finished books, I should have published much more than I have yet I constantly self-sabotage my chances. Lots of people have encouraged me, but I procrastinate, make excuses to myself and others, and put up obstacles in my own path. It's as if I'm expecting, by some stroke of fortune, that this will all just happen. My question might be, why do I constantly self-sabotage myself from making any real effort to be published?
Wow. You get great questions. No, and then, you know, I think what this question will do will allow us to really look at this concept of comfort zones and give me the opportunity to share the way I define a comfort zone and the way that I help people get out of them. Because, you know, that question, as you read it, is full of beliefs about how this person perceives themselves. There's words in there about, you know, I should have done this and it would be easy for you. And, you know, I'm a procrastinator and there's all these obstacles and all these things, which as I hear it through my own filters, what I hear are very powerful and very kind of ingrained beliefs that this person has about themselves. And the way I define a comfort zone is that a comfort zone occurs when the results that are showing up in our lives match our belief about who we are. So if I believe that I'm a procrastinator, for instance, what will tend to show up in my life as a result will be procrastination. And it's kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy. And in terms of the core question that this person is asking, and this is where it gets a little tricky, but the answer itself is really quite simple. The way to get out of that comfort zone, the way to change the result, is not to go out and really do anything differently, first of all. It's to show up differently. It's to be different. It's to change those beliefs about who you really are. So if this person were to make a decision that they are no longer a procrastinator, that they are an action-oriented person, that they take on one project at a time and take it all the way to completion, that they're clear about what their priorities are, whatever. I mean, you could literally go through that question and reverse some of the things that are showing up as limitations. But to make a declaration that that is who I am, and then to allow the behaviors to flow from that belief, rather than trying to force behaviors that don't match current belief. So in other words, and I used to use this, we were talking before we started the recording about health and fitness and the work that I've done in the health and fitness arena, and I find this to be the simplest example of how people get stuck in their comfort zone, because if a person has a belief that they are an out-of-shape, overweight person, and they're trying to take actions to get in shape and lose weight, at some point, that belief will self-sabotage them, just as the person who asked the question was asking, and why do I self-sabotage? And I think the real reason is because of that core belief that has come from wherever it's come from. It may have come from parents, from teachers, from coaches, from who knows. And maybe there's been evidence to support it up until this point, but the reality is we make all these things up. We could just as easily make a decision that as of today, I'm no longer a procrastinator. That as of today, I'm an athlete instead of a person who's out of shape. And it's amazing how people's behavior will easily shift when they change those I am beliefs.
Okay. Is this something that a person should journal about or repeat to themselves, that I am no longer a procrastinator or I'm now a fit person? How should a person do that from start?
It's a great question, and I think sometimes where this work around changing beliefs can kind of get a bad name is it almost sounds like magical thinking. And the point that you bring up, which is really valid, is that it doesn't happen overnight. And the reason for that is if anybody who's listening to this call just thinks about what happens when we try to change a belief like this. If we have, for instance, years of being a procrastinator and someone jumps on this call and says, oh, geez, you know what? I'm going to make a decision right now. I see how this isn't serving me. I'm going to make a declaration to the world, to the universe, to everyone around me. I am no longer a procrastinator.
Okay.
There is a voice inside of our own head in that moment that, I mean, you know what that voice says, right? I mean, what would you expect that voice to say?
Well, the voice will repeat what you believe, and if you believe you're a procrastinator, it will keep telling you that.
Right. It'll say something like, oh, what are you talking about? You've been procrastinating your whole life. Remember, you just did that project, and you didn't finish it, and you knew you needed it, you know, blah, 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 blah. And there is an element of time that needs to happen where a person doesn't need to just make this declaration once and magically everything changes. It's really a matter of making a decision and digging our heels in and being willing to know that that voice, that kind of comfort zone, keep you comfortable kind of voice, that self-talk is going to show up, and be willing to kind of look it right in the eye and say, no, this time I mean it. I'm done. No more procrastinating. Watch me go. And then start stacking up some evidence, because, again, the definition of a comfort zone is when our results match our belief. If we change our belief, there's going to need to be a little bit of a period of time where we allow our new actions to come from that new belief and our new results to come from our new actions. And then what we've done is created a new comfort zone. Because if that person, you know, finished two projects right on time and stayed on track and was always taking actions for two or three or four projects in a row, now all of a sudden there's no more self-talk because you started to prove that you really are no longer a procrastinator.
You know, that's you make it sound really easy and effective. And, I mean, I like the way you explain that. It's something that I'm sure that this person will be able to use as far as
writing.
I know,
And again, I don't mean to oversimplify, but one of the things I've learned, you know, I ask myself that question, who am I? And one of the things I've learned about my own skills and talents and what I'm really good at is explaining things and helping people understand kind of the simple structure behind some of these things like comfort zones or self-fulfilling prophecies or guilt or, you know, some of the things that we get ourselves caught up in. And I love to figure out, you know, well, if this is an obstacle that's holding me back, let's take a look at it. Let's understand it first and then master it. And yet at the same time, I don't mean to make it sound like, you know, there's an old expression, I don't know who I heard it from first, but, you know, it's simple, but it's not always easy. So to change some of these patterns is not always easy, but it really can be simple.
That's true. That's true. Well, great. I have another question, which might be, I'm thinking you might give something similar as an answer to this person, but let me tell you. This lady said, I'm in the process of recreating a new life for myself after a divorce and want to know how I can avoid falling into the trap of doing things that are familiar and comfortable that will take me back to my old life. For example, I'm dating a guy that has the same 4 to 5 characteristics of my ex-husband, and I don't want to go there again. So,
well, I do think, you know, it is a similar question in the sense of really delving into that issue of comfort zones. And again, you know, I give this person a lot of credit for having the awareness to recognize that this pattern is repeating itself. Because for so many people, we see them, you know, and it can be in our own lives, and sometimes we don't see it, but in the lives of the people around us, sometimes it's easier to see that we do repeat the same pattern over and over again, that we do attract the same results into our life over and over again, despite the fact that they don't really work for us. And in that sense, the term comfort zone is almost a misnomer because, you know, we see people who are 50 pounds overweight, and yet that's their comfort zone. Well, is it really comfortable for them in a kind of a pleasant, positive kind of a way? No, but it's familiar to them. It's the place that they keep being drawn back to. And again, I believe it has everything to do with that self-image, with the I am beliefs that we have. And that if we have a belief that we are overweight and out of shape, or if we have a belief, you know, whatever belief might be driving this relationship situation without knowing the specific characteristics of the man that she attracted the first time and this man that she seems to be attracting again, there's likely some belief there, maybe about what she deserves, or maybe it's, you know, modeled by a parent or a family member or something. But there is a belief there that is somehow, in my opinion, creating this attraction of a man into her life that's really not working for her. So, you know, the best thing, again, that I hear in the question is that she has the awareness. And with the awareness comes the ability to make a different choice. And for anyone who's in that situation, the area I would really zero in on are those I am beliefs, you know, to look at what is the belief? What is it that makes me somehow comfortable or familiar with this kind of man? And then once you identify that belief, because it's a belief that's clearly not serving her, she can look at ways to change that belief. We do some of that work. You know, one of the great things about the world we live in today is that people are identifying issues like this. There's an amazing amount of resources out there to help people with how to get over this kind of obstacle, how to change this kind of belief, how to shift the results that are showing up.
That's excellent. I'm sure she will benefit from that response that you just gave. Can I move on to another question, or did you have more you wanted to say?
No, I think that's probably, I mean, with the amount of information in the question, I wouldn't be really comfortable kind of diving into assumptions about the specifics, but, you know, and I think you were right that it really does touch on some of the same issues we talked about with the previous question.
Right. Well, this is a friend of mine who her name is Tina, and she lost her husband 3 years ago and was living in Panama. And then she was forced to come back to the U.S. to live with her dad in Colorado for financial reasons. She's in her late 50s, and her dad wants her to move out by December and, of course, get a job. She's had odd jobs here and there, but her problem is she's scared to get out and doesn't think she can make it on her own. And I want to know how Tina can get the courage to change her life and get out of her comfort zone and out of the safety of her dad's house. This applies, I think, to many women who've either lost a spouse or divorced or and depended on their spouse for support. So how does one get out of that kind of situation when you think that you're incapable of taking care of yourself when you've been supported by someone most of your life?
Well, I think this is another question. I don't want to make a lot of assumptions about kind of the specifics, but I'll tell you what comes up for me as an answer would be that I think what you run into is that there's a societal norm at work here where, and I think it's especially true for women who've been relying on men to kind of take care of them, where when that means of support is no longer there, it's really easy to fall into a trap, kind of fall into an assumption called, you know, I'm not able to take care of myself. Mm-hmm. And the solution, and I don't know if solution is really the right word, but to me where the answer is going to come from is to start looking not for examples of how I can't take care of myself, but look for examples of other women who are out there in the world who have been in similar situations, maybe not exactly the same situation, but similar situations, and have created a remarkable success for themselves. So these stories that are out there, and again, in today's world, the information is so easily accessible, to find stories of women who have been on their own for whatever reason, whether it's, you know, they've lost their husband or their husband has left them or whatever the circumstances, and they've made a remarkable success for themselves. They've taken those circumstances and they've turned them around, and they have made it work. And from those kinds of stories, what I find comes hope and comes a path that I can follow. As we're talking about it, I'm thinking in the work that I'm in, I think you mentioned in my bio, I'm actually a member of a group called the Transformational Leadership Council, which was started by Jack Canfield, who I worked with for years. And there's a woman in that group by the name of Lisa Nichols, who has done amazing work with teenagers for many, many years. She's an incredibly dynamic speaker. She's been a single mom for a very long time. I think her son is now 17 years old, and she's basically been on her own with him since he was very young. And, I mean, she tells these amazing stories about, you know, there were times in her life where she couldn't even afford to buy diapers for her son, and she was, you know, wrapping him in a towel and wringing out the towel. I mean, and she had so little available to her in the way of resources, but she had incredible determination, and she took what she did have, and she little by little, bit by bit, created what's now an amazing life for herself. I mean, she wrote a book about her experience and got a seven-figure advance for that book, and she's just a remarkable person who, you know, in the context of my work, stayed really connected to who she really is and continued to pursue what was really important to her in terms of her career and being a mom. And even when it was really, really hard, she made it work. So to me, for this person who's asking the question, stories like that are going to stimulate ideas, are going to create hope, are going to create a positive outlook versus kind of following that societal norm that says, as a woman, you need to have a man take care of you. So, you know, the current comfort zone might be more in that realm of, I need someone to take care of me. You know, that's my belief about who I am. I need someone to take care of me. And that can be kind of debilitating and self-defeating. But these stories, these kind of mentorship examples can really shift that around really quickly.
Yeah, and that's probably why she's staying with her dad to get, you know, because he's taking care of her as well. But she obviously needs to start with a small step in the right direction.
Exactly. And I think, you know, hopefully she's in a situation where, you know, there could be some sort of kind of an easier transition there rather than just having a cord being completely cut. But, you know, again, without knowing the specifics of her situation, You know, another thing, you know, that there's a tremendous amount of resources out there for people in situations like this. There's coaching, there's counseling, there's all sorts of resources. And again, there's so much information about just stories of people who have been in similar situations. So I would say, you know, my first bit of advice for someone like that would be to seek out the stories of people who have been in a similar situation and have ended up where you'd want to be, and really avoid the stories of people who have been in a similar situation and have ended up somewhere you wouldn't want to be. Because either way, we're kind of programming our subconscious mind with a path to potentially follow.
Yes. Well, that's an excellent advice. I shall make sure that I tell her to listen to this podcast next week. So I would like to move on to another question, which is something that I thought of, and that is, what do you think, what effect do you think travel has on a person to get out of their comfort zone and change? I'm a firm believer that travel opens up your mind and gets you out of, you know, your little routine. And I'm just curious what you think about travel and comfort zones and changing.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right about that. And you know, when I'm working with people about setting their intentions and setting their goals, you know, so many people, either the end of the year or the beginning of the year, they're setting their goals. And one of the things I always encourage them to do is to get out of their usual environments. Sometimes people don't understand the power of the environments that they're surrounded by on a day-to-day basis. And by environments, I mean everything from, you know, the home that you live in, the office that you work out of, the people that you're surrounded by. Just the normal environments that surround us every single day tend to keep us in the same place. They tend to kind of reinforce whatever that current comfort zone is. And I think anyone who's ever traveled or even just taken a day to go for a walk on the beach instead of go to the office will attest to the fact that it opens up a whole different level of creativity and possibility that oftentimes just doesn't exist when we're in our normal and usual and same environments over and over again. So, I mean, I love your story. I can't wait to read your story about, you know, a really significant shift in environments. I mean,
right.
You know,
yeah.
Just, I
and
mean, it has to be just a classic example of how important. And was there resistance to that shift? I know you said you did that with your whole family, but there must have been. Talk about comfort zones. I mean, there must have been some pulling to stay in that current comfort zone.
Right, especially with teenagers. But
Yeah,
and as you mentioned yourself, every child is different. So out of the three, one of them was not very comfortable. But to be honest with you, when we came back, it was something that benefited each one in a different way. So I totally am a firm believer, as you probably know, in travel and seeing the world. And actually, I just wanted to mention that somebody told me that ever since he tried skydiving, he no longer has problems getting out of his comfort zone. I thought that was funny.
There you go. But yeah, I mean.
Yeah.
Well, and I think on some level, your story is like real-life skydiving. I mean, you guys, I mean, took a huge leap in making the move that you made as a family. And I think it is a great example for people, and even if people aren't ready to make that kind of leap, to, again, increase their awareness and just be aware of how your current environments are impacting you. And if you're not ready to, you know, pack up the family and move across the world, would you be willing to take a day off and spend the day out of your office with a journal, capturing your ideas for what you want your life to really be like, or to just take off a half a day or a morning and go to the park instead of your office, or whatever it is. But the issue of environments, I mean, we see it all the time in the work that I do, where people come to a seminar and they're in a completely different environment and their experience of life is completely different and they're open to all sorts of new possibilities and they go home and they're ready to make a big change in their life and they land square in the middle of their usual environments and they don't understand why nothing really changes. And in a lot of cases, it's because people underestimate the importance of those environments and the power of those environments, and that, you know, they're changing their thinking, which is one of their environments, but leaving all the other environments the same, which are kind of overpowering. So,
yeah. As far as people calling in, are we still on for this, or should I? Wasn't quite sure how we were going about this. Did you to see if anyone wants to call in with a question?
Well, let's,
you want me to
let's
check
and see if we have other people on the line here. Hold on.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Well, it doesn't sound like we have anybody else who's actually called in live.
Okay. Well, then I will move on to one more question here, if you have time.
Sure. Let's do one more.
Okay. This person says, as I have gotten older, I have developed an intense fear that sometimes cripples me. Some days are okay, and some days I can't do anything. It comes over me like a panic attack. I know this fear is keeping me from doing things. For example, I would love to teach at a college, but I'm afraid to stand up in front of a group. How do I stop this fear? I have become fearful of the fear. I know it's irrational and silly, but I can't shake it. I have even thought of acupuncture or hypnosis. It is stopping me from being gutsy. So
fear, again, we've covered some big topics today, and you know, the again, as I listen to the question, I hear someone that's gotten really anchored into a belief about themselves. The fear
right.
is no longer external. It sounds to me like this person has really, like they've adopted this fear, they've taken it into their home, they've welcomed it and really made it feel very comfortable, right? And
yes.
yet it doesn't
yeah.
serve them. And I'm reminded as I think about the question, of something that I learned from Jack Canfield many years ago in a workshop that he teaches, and he was teaching people about fear and about how we really create these fears. And
mm-hmm.
what he did was he changed the language around fear to get us to look at fear differently. And rather than saying, I am afraid of speaking in public or whatever the fear is, what he encouraged us to do was to use the language, I'm scaring myself by imagining, and to play the scenario out in my mind. So in this
wow.
case, where it sounds like we've got somebody who's kind of paralyzed at the idea of getting up in front of a group of people and having to speak or present, what's happening
right.
is that she is scaring herself by imagining something is going to happen. She's imagining what people are going to think. She's imagining that she's going to forget what she has to say. She's imagining something. And it's
right.
in that imagining that the real fear, that the real emotional, physiological response comes up. And I know for me, when I did that, when I started changing my language around fear and really owning it and taking responsibility
right.
for the fact that I'm creating the fear, first of all, it took a lot of the charge out of it. And second of all, it put me in a position to be able to do something to minimize it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I mean, I love that concept. In fact, I think I'm going to use it myself next time I have to make a speech.
Yeah, it still cracks me up. You know, I do a lot of speaking myself, and I've gotten very comfortable
right.
up on stage. But there is sometimes still, like, I mean, I think the number of times I've been in front of a group, but every once in a while when I'm getting ready to go on stage, I will feel that fear come welling up. And I think for most people, what happens when the fear starts to well up is we turn up the volume. You know, it's like we don't recognize that we have a choice to either dissipate the fear or magnify the fear. And it seems like the natural response is to magnify it. And I think if there was a gift I would want to give to anyone about fear, it's just to remind ourselves that we have the opportunity to, you know, either keep it at the level that it's at and just kind of observe, or ideally to minimize it, to kind of let it go, but
right.
not to go into that realm of making it worse. You know, not to go in, oh my God, what if I do forget? And I'm going to remember the times that I did forget, and, you know, whatever
yeah.
we might come up with to make it actually
right.
worse, rather than to say, you know, in this moment, I'm scaring myself by imagining that I'm going to forget what I have to say.
Right.
And just in saying that, I remember that I could choose not to scare myself in that way, that I could just as easily remember, you know, that I'm going to be, you know, perfect and to focus on the standing ovation instead of on, you know, the moment that I forgot what I wanted to say and remember that nobody knows what I was going to say anyway. So even if I forgot, no one will know.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's an excellent point. I have to say one thing, though. What do you do when your body responds differently in terms of, like, your hand shaking and you want your hand to stop shaking and you're holding the mic? That's the thing. Even if you talk to yourself, it might be a delayed response before the shaking part stops. But I guess you can talk to yourself. And any other tips that you might have for that?
Well, my tip would be just a reminder that, you know, it's a spiraling kind of a sequence that happens. That the reason my body is shaking is because of what I'm thinking. And I can continue to think even more of what I'm thinking, and my body will continue to shake and maybe shake even more. But the way to get the body to stop shaking is to pause. I have a dear friend, Teresa Huggins, who wrote a book called Pausing Long Enough to Notice, and I think there's such power in that word. You know, we think we have to go, 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 and so often the answer to these kinds of questions is to just allow ourselves to pause and take a breath. I can think of times when I've been on stage where I just felt completely out of breath, and I felt like, you know, I'm supposed to be speaking and I'm supposed to be talking, and I can't talk because I'm completely out of breath. And the only answer in that moment is to allow myself to pause, take a nice deep breath in, and then start again. Because if I continue to try and talk when I don't have any air, it's not a very pleasant experience for me or the audience. Yeah.
Definitely not. Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Robert, I really thank you so much for answering all these questions. You've been extremely helpful. I also didn't know if there's something else you wanted to add before I just mention your book one more time, or?
Well, no, I love what we've covered, you know, and I'd love, you know, to point people in the direction of the book and the journal if people are interested in taking a look at our work. I know you had put a link on your site, which I appreciate, for to direct people to where the book and the journal is. I did want to make people aware that if they go to our website, and they go to the book page, if they actually click on the image of the book instead of the buy button, they'll get a better price on the book, and the order will actually come directly into my office, and I'll send them a signed copy of the book and the journal. So that's like a little secret backdoor thing I've got set up on the website for when I do interviews like this. So if people can just click on the image of the book instead of the buy button, they'll get a signed version and a better price.
Excellent. And just the website, again, is manifestingfornongurus.com?
Right. Yes. It's the title of the book. It's Manifesting for Non-Gurus, because I believe that we can all manifest. We don't need to move to India and live in a cave for 10 years and somehow become enlightened. In fact, I believe we all already are manifesting. It's just a matter of whether we're manifesting the results we really want. And the book and journal are designed to help people understand the process of manifestation and really direct it in the way it's going to work more effectively for them. So.
Wonderful. Well, I appreciate all your time, and thank you so much for answering all these questions for us today.
You're welcome. I appreciate the opportunity. It was great to spend the time with you, and there's great contact information for me on that website. If people are interested in getting in touch with me, that's the simplest way to do it, and we'll help people in whatever way we possibly can.
Yes, and I will put the podcast up with a link to your blog, to your website, and hopefully this will be on Monday.
Perfect, and I'm looking forward to having a hearing about when your book comes out, because I want to make sure I get a copy of that. It's, like I said, I think a perfect example of the way that we're encouraging people to live their life, and you know, we have a lot of conversation about the experience people are having of life. And it sounds to me like your story, again, is a really great example of making decisions that will lead you in the direction of having the kind of experience of life that you really want to have. So.
Yes, thank you so much, Robert.
All right, you're welcome. Thank you.
Okay, Bye-bye.